radio 212, comm check.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound podcast, coming to you from Austin, Texas this time around. I've been bebopping around the country for the last couple years, but happened to land in the home studio today to sit down and chat with Kennedy Phillips. He is a sound designer and also a film artist as well. And creator of Magus Elgar, a fantasy comedy audio adventure that I have been all about since meeting Kennedy the last few days ago. Actually, I have listened to, like I was telling him, quite a few episodes, a couple of them many times over, just to get an idea of the sound design and the scope of this project. Welcome to the podcast, Kennedy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. And greetings, acolytes. Coming to you live from, well, Lakewood, California.
Well, before we get started and really start digging deep into the creation and the creative process and the technical process behind the creation of Magus Elgar, tell us a little bit about your background, Kennedy. How you came to become a sound designer, and how it is that you got into that field. I always love to expose our audience to people's stories, how they came about their chosen vocation. I think it's such an important thing to understand, to get somebody's passion. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my tale began as a wee child of 4.5 years old, when I was watching television on Nickelodeon. And my parents had approached me, and it was a passing casual conversation. They had said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I took a look at the cartoons, and I pointed at it, and I said, "I want to be that," which was a relief to my parents, because for a brief stint I wanted to be a taxi driver. But when I said I wanted to be that, I believe they were under the impression that I wanted to make movies or cartoons, but I think I wanted to be a cartoon at the time. As my acuity of what I wanted to do evolved, it eventually turned into being a filmmaker, and I started making crummy little movies with my home camera, and the rest was history. No, I'm kidding. I always did do like a lot of short films and stuff with my home camera, and I learned editing and sound design when I was in high school, where I would like make my own sound effects and record them to put into my little home movies. When I finally got to college for my master's program at Chapman University, a lot of my editing was, I would say, at best mediocre at the time. When I presented some of my work to them, everybody said, "You know, you've actually got a really good ear for sound design. You should probably try doing that some more." So I started trying that more, and I got nominated for an award by my college, the Cecil Awards. So I figured I'd stick around with that, because I've always had like a really a deep passion for sound. Even before I started doing sound design myself, because I always loved sound effects. I always loved little noises things would make. And like, I would always love to break down how someone created a sound effect in a movie.
Yeah. I mean, the process of Foley art, the Foley artists that actually create that kind of stuff, it's a dream job of mine. I would love nothing more than to sit in a room of microphones and smash things around. You know what we need is 18 buckets of melons today. Let's get some cool crack splats going on.
I wish I could tell you that the life of a Foley artist is as glamorous as doing that all day, but a lot of Foley is recording footsteps, like grabbing a box and making sure that it syncs up very well, which I never had the pleasure of being in a professional studio environment to do that. I've always had my own Foley stage. I've always had rented out the Chapman University Foley stage to do a lot of my recordings, which a lot of my recordings for Magus Elgar took place in that stage.
Oh, wow. Well, and explain to our audience, I mean, we've done a little bit about what Foley art is. Explain to them what a Foley stage is and what that incorporates.
Ah, yes. Now, when you want to record sound effects for a movie, the sound effects are not actually being played while the camera is recording on set. Most of the time you need to focus on them talking very clearly. So anything from the footsteps moving around to your clothing rustle to even just props being handled does not have the fidelity that you need to record what you're looking for. So what you do is you go to a Foley stage, which is a recording studio with many different types of floors, from wood to tile to cement to dirt. As well as racks upon racks of props, and ranging from shoes to scrap metal to broken bicycles and other things like that. And you watch the movie and record sound effects while the movie is playing, so that those sounds are put back into the movie, as pioneered by the great Jack Foley of the halcyon days of early 1900s Hollywood. So a lot of times, a lot of the Foley that's usually done on those films is like just doing footsteps, doing clothing rustle, handling some very basic things. And you have to really get it down to like the exact frame that they walk, or you end up having to mess around with the audio file for a long time. Cause a lot of people can actually just take stock sounds of like library sounds and punch them in there, and it works okay, but it's time consuming and it's not 100% accurate.
Yeah.
It's usually just better to record the Foley yourself.
Precisely. And, you know, how was it that, you first came into, sound design in the realm that you do it now? I mean, we heard about how, you were encouraged to go into sound design, but how did you first find your path into that industry specifically? Because it's as opposed to normal recording engineering, mastering, things like that, that most people utilize the world of audio for. Sound design is something very specific and something very, very unique.
Yeah. I know that for where my definite skill set is, I know my strongest is within sound design. Mostly because when it comes to getting the mastering, it's mostly playing around with levels of different sound effects, and I'm okay at it, but it's not a passion of mine. For sound design though, I actually had been toying around with an audio drama before I went to Chapman, as something I did in my spare time, where I'd have to record my own sound effects and build the sounds in my dorm room, because I did not have access to a professional library of any kind. Too often the case. So what I ended up having to do is I'd have to record myself tackling a couch or drowning by pouring water on my mouth and being blah, 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 blah. But as I got better, I started finding ways to combine certain sound effects, to weave them together, to make my show more entertaining, even if that show wasn't that great, and I don't think it's really anywhere on the internet without it being quite buried under the annals of history.
Well, you know, it's never truly gone. It's just hidden away on like past page five of Google search, so no one's ever gonna find it. Nobody ever looks that far.
Hey man, the fifth page of Google is probably one of the best forms of cybersecurity you can think of on the internet.
That's right. That's right.
No, nobody's gonna look for that. Sorry.
Oh no, that's all right. It for me, like as an artist, as an audio engineer, things like that, it's hard to imagine a world without people like you, without people like you that do sound design specifically, movies, television, everything, most of the media that we listen to, video games even, it would not exist. Oh, man. It would be video, totally like, different.
It really impresses me listening to like some video games. Probably one of my favorite examples was a long time ago, Visceral Games created a game called Dead Space.
Oh yeah.
On the 360. And one of my favorite things to do in that game was I got to the engine room. And in a horror game, sound is absolutely essential to get across what you're looking for. And I would just pan slowly around the room with the camera and actually hear the sound space adjust depending on where my camera was. It was nuts. But I think probably like it gives you a very rare opportunity in games and film to toy around artistically in a way that most people don't even think about. For instance, there is a game called Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice on the PlayStation 4.
Okay.
It's about a Nordic woman going to try and get revenge for her her loved one, who is I believe it's a beating heart in a bag she has on her belt, or I think it's a head. And she's going in there and going to fight a demon. But as it turns out, she's not fighting a real demon, but she's dealing with crippling schizophrenia.
Oh, wow.
That is portrayed almost exclusively through the sound design. You have to wear headphones playing this game because the different voices that are whispering and speaking to you are simultaneously trying to hurt you. They're trying to help you. They're trying to guide you in the game. And it's an absolutely chilling experience.
Interesting.
And I loved every second of it.
Yeah, one of my favorites that played a lot with negative space was actually Fatal Frame back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was just like eerily silent and devoid of sound. And that in and of itself is a concept of sound design, leaving the empty space, creating that feeling of void. Go ahead.
Sorry. Sometimes that negative space can be used to accentuate a louder sound later. Like, did you hear about the new Godzilla King of Monsters movie?
Yes, I've not had a chance to check it out yet.
It is a fantastic movie, which people are complaining there is too much Godzilla in it, which I find to be absolutely baffling. But anyway, the what I love about the sound design of that movie is I'm going to try very hard not to spoil anything, is that they'll use negative space right before a loud sound to indicate something massive, like a huge explosion. Or anything like that. But I think my favorite bit of sound design in that movie is there's a scene where they're underwater and they're about to hear the big monster. I'm not going to say who, but everybody in the room gets quiet and you're hearing this deep rumbling, like boom, boom. It's almost like footsteps at first, but then you realize that it is the heartbeat of the monster, and they're looking out the window and the monster is like football fields away. The monster's heartbeat is shaking the ship.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's so effective.
That is awesome.
I could gush about that all day. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I always loved those movies as a kid. They are such an ingrained part of my childhood, and yeah, it's going to be super exciting to see that. I have heard nothing but great things from the groups that I follow, that talk about such things. So
it's phenomenal.
Well, tell us a little bit about the creation of Magus Elgar. What was it that, I mean, I myself, whenever we spoke the other day, I was telling you how whenever I'm on the road, I frequently, as I go to sleep at night, things like that, and I'm just sitting around my hotel room, I'll be listening to old school radio dramas. Things mm-hmm. like, you know, The Shadow, you know, the stuff like that. X minus one.
You know, one of my favorites. A friend of mine just remade The Shadow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you should look it up. It's called The Shadow Remake. He's great. And I really want him, I really want to encourage him to continue making more things.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I was telling you the other day, even with my podcast network, it was like, man, I would love to have something like that. That is just awesome. And the creativity that goes on behind it, the work that goes on behind the scenes on a show like that, is absolutely amazing. So tell us a little bit about the creation of Magus Elgar. What was it that inspired you to make it? And then we'll get into a little bit of the technicality behind things, you know, what it takes to make the show, and we'll listen to a little bit.
Well, I would say that where the inspiration started was a series called Professor Nebulous. It was a series made by Mark Gatiss and Graham Duff, who now is making, set pieces of War of the Worlds as an audio drama and is getting all the awards. But Professor Nebulous was a parody of Doctor Who. That was an absolute blast to listen to. I would listen to this show multiple times for years. There was only like 18 episodes, but I loved every second of them. And it was something that had always been a objective of mine at some point to say, you know, I could probably do something like this, and I could probably put my absolute all into it to make it work. So the first step, of course, is confirming that you want to do a thing, and coming up with the idea of like this Merlin type character who is still a little bit young themselves. Like I wanted to have a Merlin who acted and treated magic as a kid in a candy shop would treat magic. Where it's just, instead of it being like, magic is this very important thing from another dimension that you must understand and respect. Man, if I was a magic caster, I'd be like, hey, you want to see this cool thing that I can do?
Yeah, check this out.
Check this out!
Yeah, exactly.
Which is so much of what Magus Elgar is. It's just this really excitable Magus who wants to see the coolest and strangest things that magic can present and present it to the world, regardless if it puts you into bodily harm. but yeah, when I came up with the premise, I called up my employer at the time, Hamed Hokumzadeh, and I proceeded to vomit word salad at him for a solid 5 minutes about this rambling story about Merlin except young and magic happens, and I wanted to be like another author that I like who made the Discworld series, and started talking and talking and talking. I'm like, okay, so what do you think? And he goes, all right, first off, what's a Discworld?
Yeah, Larry Nevin.
Terry Pratchett made this Discworld series, which is it's a very tongue-in-cheek kind of book series. Love every second of him. They actually recently made a show about with Terry Pratchett's writing called Good Omens on Amazon. You should check it out.
Yes, I've heard great things about that show. It was all the rage at South by this last year.
Yeah, it deserves every bit of attention. So Hamed said, all right, we'll make it like a proof of concept and I will see what I can do to help you get started. So I
I recorded a pilot episode with a bunch of my friends, which actually, incidentally, is the same script that would eventually become episode 4. Where they were kind of like two scientists are working on a magic experiment and two magi are trying to create a nuclear reactor with possums. And he said, well, this is great. And then leaned forward and said to me, all right, so what's your budget? I'm sorry? Like, yeah, I mean, I'm not paying for this. So
yeah,
like, where are you getting your money from? I'm like, oh yeah.
Money makes the world go round.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta figure out some way to pay for studio time, pay for, you know, whatever it takes. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Unless you have a dedicated group of individuals that are all part of it and are not getting paid, but that's pretty rare.
Yeah, so I scoured around on how to get funding and so on and so forth, and I came to the conclusion that I couldn't ask anybody to pay for this. I couldn't ask them to take this kind of risk because I'm nobody. I'm still very much am nobody. So if I was going to do something to this scale, I'd have to prove myself. So I paid for it myself. I dumped my life savings into this project in the hopes that it would be a good, in part because I wanted to tell the story and in part because I wanted to prove that I could direct, that I could make a thing that was wholly and entirely mine as an idea. And it was a hoot, you know, it turned out pretty good. Casting. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I was going to say it turned out great. The casting is spot on for the characters. Y'all did a fantastic job with that. The music is awesome. The dialogue that's written is great, great stuff.
Yeah, the getting all the voice actors was a little bit of a challenge because I started off with voices.com and I got 800 auditions.
Oh, wow.
For this project. And it was wonderful because Mike Fry over at voices.com helped me sift through a lot of performances because, you know, like, almost everybody, they put their all into it, but there's going to be quite a few that they don't understand what the character is supposed to be and just
sure.
End up doing their own thing or whatever. And that's kind of the nature about casting. But there were a couple of other characters in the show where, like, I went through all the casting and I was just like, I'm not digging any of this. And I end up personally asking a couple of people outside of voices.com. For example, Kaylee Fawn is played by Sandra Espinoza. She's known as Dusty Old Roses on YouTube, and she does a lot of fan dubs, voice acting in a couple of other areas. I know she did voice for something about Kirby All-Star where she plays a Waddle Dee. She does a couple of voice. She does a voice or two for Final Fantasy Machina Bridged. And she's a great voice actress and she's a wonderful person that I did have the pleasure of meeting in person at one point when we got nominated for Best Original Work in New York. But I actually just walked up and contacted her by email and says, hey, do you want to be in this thing? And she sent me an audition in like a day. And I was like, oh all right, wow. Cool. I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you'd be surprised, especially whenever you do contact somebody like that with an interesting opportunity, something that they may not have been contacted with before. This would be, I mean, this is an absolutely interesting project. Tell us a little bit about the first episode of Magus Elgar before we listen to it.
So in episode 1, Magus Elgar and Udo are handling their day job as magic troubleshooters. They're often contacted by the Ministry of Casters or the Council of Nine, the government of the World of Hoth, an ultimate dimension separate from our own, where magic is the defining force of nature rather than science. From there, they receive a request to handle a man named Sorcerer Incadale, who is apparently attempting to cast some kind of dangerous magic with this incredibly powerful artifact known as the Mirror Cauldron, a cauldron made of solid mercury. Upon getting there, the caster of Sorcerer Incadale overreacts about their presence, thinking that it's the cops, rightfully so, and casts a spell into the Mirror Cauldron and transforms himself into a giant, threatening dragon. And that's around the point where the narrator starts explaining what's going on.
All right. Well, with that in mind, everybody, here is part of Magus Elgar, Episode 1, The Mirror Cauldron.
Enjoy.
Everywhere throughout the world of Hoth, though each spell comes with a price. Without totems to channel their power, one could easily find themselves covered head to toe in symbols from dimensions unknown, sputtering about a beast with a million eyes. But thankfully, our tale does not follow a descent into such madness.
Dragon!
It begins with the death of a sorcerer, who was nice enough to do that for us already. Now this...
Get down, sir!
Oh, goodness, accursed eyes, get off me!
You'll have plenty of time to explain this later! Get out of here!
You don't have to tell me twice. Later, then.
Pass through, dear Udo! Hold your hands high! Oh, no. Remember, magic is about confidence! Declare your will and show that dragon you mean business!
I declare that this is a terrible idea!
That's the spirit, Acolyte! Incadale can't maintain this dragon form for long! Just remember the root of all magic!
No!
Incorrect, Udo! Offensive magic is derived from being offensive! You have to insult the laws of nature in the ancient tongue of Trite!
I have to what?
Insult the dragon! Honestly, I'm talking to myself here.
Magus Elgar, a little help.
And there you can hear a little bit of the art of sound design. The fact that you have to take every sound into consideration. You have to think about not only the way that the actors are delivering lines, but how that's recorded, how those things mix together. How much pre-production goes into a show like this before y'all ever step foot in the studio?
Well, you have to consider an audio drama similar to an animation in that the pre-production, in a way, is the production. You can go in and make adjustments and make re-recordings and other things like that. But a lot of the time, when you write out the script, you kind of have to plan out the way a person's going to be speaking throughout the piece. You usually will like indicate like, okay, this is a part where they're yelling, or this is a part where this is happening, or something like that. Sometimes what we would do is if like they're being attacked or in the middle of a fight or something, I'd have them like, they would be like recording, panting and making their anime sounds. And I'll be like, in the recording booth being like, okay, he's going to swipe over your head. Look out. And they'd like make the sound of them ducking or other things like that.
Yeah, and some of that is being on talkback microphones, you know, talking to people in their head while they're delivering lines, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, as for the sound effects themselves, a lot of that is post-production. Mostly because oftentimes I don't know what a sound effect is going to sound like when I'm writing the script. I might have an idea, general idea in my head, but when I get into the studio and start like recording sound effects, it kind of generates into its own thing. 85% of Magus Elgar is foleyed. A lot of the sound effects, a lot of the the other creatures and other things like that. We do use some stock sounds to generate the thing, but like we'll not use it in a traditional sense where a lot of shows and a lot of cartoons and other things like that, what they'll do is they'll like grab one sound effect and just kind of lay it in and just leave it there. Whereas what we do is we'll take the first part of a sound or the bass of another sound or like the treble of a third sound and combine it together, which is what made that big dragon sound, which is a combination of my voice and Kellen Goff's voice with a couple of other dragon-y sounds that we recorded into it. Like, I think one of my favorite sounds in that particular scene that you just heard is the dragon's breath, where I'm so used to hearing a dragon breath just like just shoot out without much ceremony, where it just goes like whoosh and there it goes, where it's all fire. Yeah. But this dragon shoots lightning that's on fire, so a lightning dragon wouldn't sound like just flames the whole time. So with the buildup, I had him like do this really deep inhale, which I recorded myself as a, and then shoots out. I had like a crack of a lightning bolt, some sparks flying, and then I added like the sound of a flamethrower that I had in my library for a long time ago to make that sound.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's hearing different textures within the audio and trying to find the best sound that befits that. And then mixing it all together, much like a normal rock and roll engineer would mixing guitar parts, you know, and overlaying that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because when you're recording a sound effect, like if you're using like multiple different sounds, the texture of it depends on how much you put into it. You gotta. I use this metaphor. It's a stupid metaphor, but I always describe a sound effect akin to making a sandwich.
Okay. Okay.
There are certain pieces of the sound that are going to be the forefront, the bed of your piece or the bread. So let's say, like for example, let's go for like a punch sound effect. The big sound that you want to get is basically the thump of them hitting the person. So it'd be like you punch your chest a little bit, but then you want to have the slight wisp of it flying through the air, like a, as it like punch, goes through. And then you need something a little bit bassier, like maybe like you're slapping your stomach or you're hitting a big leathery pillow or something like that with a golf club.
Yep.
And then you bring it all together and then you have to find the right amount for each. So it's like when you're making your sandwich, nobody likes a sandwich that has too much mayonnaise, or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that is mostly peanut butter and not enough jelly.
Yeah.
Like you got to find the right balance for it to sound right.
Yeah. And it's
I think the dragon breath attack is the culmination of like 17 or 18 different sound effects going off at once.
Wow. Wow. And that's just it. Whenever you hear that, you don't really consider that there's, like you said, 15, 17 different sound effects going on simultaneously to make that happen. It sounds seamless. It sounds like one. So, it's phenomenal, the art that you're able to create to make this happen. How long does it normally take you to, do you produce the show as a season and then release it? Do you produce the show episode by episode? How does that work out for you guys? What is your production schedule like?
Well, this first season, we produced it, in one big season. Mostly because, I wanted to have it all readily available right away, similar to how Netflix and Amazon does it, where I didn't want people to have to wait
for it. They can binge listen.
They can binge listen, which most people end up doing. next time around, I might consider doing it more like episode at a time and trying to find a way to bring it to people more. Because right now we're available wherever audiobooks are sold, and you can get it there for pretty cheap. It's like $8 for the whole series, but like $1.50. It's like $1.10 or something per episode.
All right.
It's really small. But for our production schedule, we wanted to make everything out all at the same time so that we got there. We kind of would be working consistently because we only had like a certain amount of time to get the final mixer to come in and do everything and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's
We did release like the first episode in like March of 2018, but we released the entire series proper July.
Okay.
Which had mixed effect to it. Because by the time July hit, everybody was like, wait, you guys are still a thing? I thought you gave up.
I thought that was over. Well, and that's just it. It to produce something like this is just like producing a miniseries. You know, the only difference is you have no cameras on set. That's literally it. That's the only difference. So it is just as complex as putting together an episodic TV series or anything like that. When it comes to gathering actors, gathering the right talent, getting everybody together to make it happen. Even the production schedule of getting individual voice actors to come in and take care of their tracking, takes months to get everything in line to release a couple of handfuls of episodes.
Yeah. And I wanted to make sure that like we weren't stuck with delays or unreliable, release schedules, like a couple of series that I've heard have, suffered from.
Yeah.
So if I made it all in one go, I could either release it all at once or I could release it episodically for people to get really excited about each week. But I mean, that would be limiting them to my viewing habits, which I like to watch like one episode of something and then just let it digest.
Sure. And I know people that do follow episodics, amongst their podcast life. And they'll normally let those ride because it's interesting how terrestrial radio is kind of waning off, but talk radio is still there. Its numbers stay fairly static. And at the same time, the podcast audience has grown hugely. The market for podcasts has grown hugely. And I think it's very much because the people that listen to podcasts are the same people that would listen to your NPR. They're going to schedule a show into their life, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's never going to be a point where people don't want to listen to something. I mean, for one, you can't really watch a TV show while you're driving without getting into an accident.
Sure.
But people are still wanting to listen to those talk shows. They're still wanting to listen to the music they want to listen to. The key difference between radio and podcasts nowadays is ultimately control.
Sure.
Control in for radio, control is in the hands of the DJ. Whereas for podcasts, the control is in the hands of the listener. Because they can listen to it whenever they want. They can pause it, not miss a conversation.
Exactly. And I really think, like I said, it's also the mentality. The people that listen to talk radio are typically the people that listen to podcasts. It's interesting how now, no matter what radio station you listen to, just about, if they have a live DJ there, as they sign off, they tell people to listen to their podcast on the radio station website. So everybody has gotten to where they have a podcast now. And to be able to release stuff like this in that format, I've even had musicians tell me that they have stopped writing full-on albums like they used to. They were like,
Go
ahead.
I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest, because growing up, there were tons of albums
sure.
where they were telling a full story with their album.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be hit singles, but there was a fantastic experiment done doing that kind of thing. I'm reminded of Pink Floyd's The mm-hmm. Wall, where the whole album tells one long cohesive story.
Yes.
Throughout each of their individual pieces. And there's a couple of others that handle that nowadays too. Like there's a musician that I grew up with. His band was originally called Lemon Demon. His name is Neil Sisirga. This is quite possibly one of the most fascinating people on the internet, because this guy has invented and reinvented himself throughout the decades of internet history. When he started out, he just was doing standard music from like the early 2000s of him just doing like parody songs.
Okay.
And just singing about whatever he wants. And then he started doing Harry Potter Puppet Pals, which got him huge in the late 2000s while Harry Potter was still like really big in the movies. And now he did this album called Mouth Sounds, I think, where he released an album where he will take songs and remix them in ways that you never would have imagined before.
All right.
Like he managed to piece together. I assume you're familiar with the song Wonderwall.
Yes.
He mixes Wonderwall with You Spin Me Right Round, and it strangely fits. Where the lyrics of Wonderwall is being used to sing on top of You Spin Me Right Now, and it sounds like it belongs there. It's witchcraft, I tell you.
Yeah. And I don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of albums, especially scoping thematic albums. But that's kind of a limited audience. Not everybody is into music in that form, you know.
That's a good point.
And it's kind of the same way. There are people that I know that listen to episodic podcasts, and there are people that I know that can only listen to, podcast banter, where it's like a morning show, and everybody's rambling over each other. And I'm like, I don't grasp that, I want a coast to coast AM, I want an in-depth conversation is what I want. I want to dig into a topic whenever I'm listening to a podcast, or I want to escape and listen to something like Magus Elgar, where it's a story that's taken me somewhere else. But not everybody's into doing that while they're driving down the road in traffic,
Yeah. If I was to say, I prefer going into fiction myself, if only because, nonfiction requires a lot of research in a couple of ways.
Yes.
But another piece of it is that my personal life, my nonfiction has always been quite stranger than fiction.
Okay.
Throughout my entire life, I've had stories that sound like something out of a children's novel, where I grew up on a sailboat. When I was a child, I sailed around the world. I had gotten to meet some incredible people throughout my life. I am sticking to my guns and trying to make a series in the hope that one day I will get to sound design a cartoon.
Right.
Little bits like that. It's always been a little bit odd. And instead of trying to just adhere to a nonfiction story or something about something that did happen, I'd rather present my story of whatever it is that my life is about in the filter of a child's imagination, or whatever, man child, if you want to call me that.
Okay. I can appreciate that. I am very much the same.
And present it in a fantastical way that will resonate enough that maybe you'll project aspects of your own life into it.
Yeah. And
I think everybody's got a story that they can project into a magical adventure, right?
Well, and that only comes from internal passion, Kennedy. That only comes from an internal burning fire and yearning to create something. I've seen it so many times in my career as a live sound engineer, working with four or five bands a night, to see that one band during the night that just knew how to connect with the audience, that just knew how to read that vibe in the air and be able to have that true moment of entropy with the audience where they became one with them. And it was so interesting to see that. And it's interesting to see somebody like you who is taking a story and bringing it to life without picture. I think it's something very special to actually arrange a story for audio only. That's how we told stories before we had writing. Like, it goes back to such an ancient tradition of storytelling, to tell stories in this way. It's so beautiful. And for you to bring that, and to be one of those people that's bringing that into a new realm, into the digital age, doing it the way you're doing, is so great and so inspiring to see somebody doing that.
Well, thank you. Though admittedly, I will say that I actually do know the pioneer of the modern audio drama that started out like about 10 years ago. His name is Casey Wayland. He actually was a teacher at my school at Chapman University.
Oh, wow.
I had the pleasure of meeting him on occasion, talking about my show and his show. He made the series called We're Alive. It was the very first zombie audio drama.
Ooh.
Done for podcast.
Wow.
And it was a hoot. It was a huge hit. It is quite possibly one of the most, if not the most, downloaded podcasts in history.
Oh, wow.
He's working on a series.
Oh, I think we just lost him. Hold on just a second. Hold on. Are you still there?
I think it's like it's still the zombie apocalypse, but like, I think they've got some kind of treasure hunting thing going on in it. And like, the man is absolutely brilliant at what he does. And I highly recommend you take a peek in it if you're into like zombie survival and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, anytime I get to hear something like that, I'm always excited. Like I said the other day, whenever we were chatting on the phone, I couldn't wait to get the first links. The minute that I got the one from YouTube, I went on and watched it, and then started going on to the website. Let everybody know where they can go to check out all the great episodes for Magus Elgar, how they can contribute, if you have a Patreon or anything like that set up. And what they can do to, I guess, bring more awareness and let people know where to find this great, great story.
Well, Magus Elgar is available wherever audiobooks are sold. If you visit MagusElgar.com and sign up for our newsletter, you can get a discount for the Bandcamp version of the show. Of course, if you want to support us proper, you can always talk about the show elsewhere. We're on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and some of the other popular ones that I'm not sure if they've been invented yet. But the only way that we can really get ourselves out there is if you talk about it, if you share it with your friends, if you encourage them to pick up their own copy of the show. We are planning on getting more stuff out there. We're working on a season 2. We're working on an animated pilot.
Here's my advice, folks. Quite honestly, go out, buy the series. It's great. Support it. If a friend wants to hear it, give them an episode. Go drug dealer on it.
Yeah, I mean, the first 3 episodes are free on YouTube if you don't if you don't want to like dive in right away.
Yeah, hook them for free.
Hour of content to listen to.
And I guarantee you will go buy the episodes. I guarantee you will. It is fantastic.
But yeah, we don't have a Patreon. We don't have really merchandising yet, if only because we're still very, very small compared to some other podcasts out there. But the best way to support the show is to share it with your friends and pick up a copy for yourself. We also have the fancy edition on Bandcamp, where if you purchase it, you'll get access to the soundtrack, as well as a handful of sound effects that I created that you can use under a Creative Commons license.
Okay.
And some bloopers from a couple of episodes.
All right. Fantastic. Well, tell them one more time the website that they can go to find all this great stuff, find all the links, where to follow, where to get it.
Magus Elgar is available wherever audiobooks are sold. You can find us on iTunes, Bandcamp, Amazon, Audible, and many, many more. Visit MagusElgar.com to download your copy today. Listen to the first 3 episodes for free on YouTube.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Once again, everybody, Kennedy Phillips, sound designer, creator and editor of Magus Elgar, the fantastic fantasy comedy adventure that you can check out at MagusElgar.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kennedy.
Anytime, sir.
Please do hold the line while you're online checking out Kennedy's work at MagusElgar.com. Do make sure to stop on by TalkingSoundShow.com. That's where you can get all the episodes. We're in season 5 right now. I can't see the show stopping anytime soon as long as I'm alive. Plenty of stuff there. There's also the freelancer AV directory. If you're a freelance AV guy like me out doing audio video for a living, check it out. If we don't have companies listed in your area, let us know some companies in your area that hire freelance AV guys. It's one of our ways that we pay it forward to the industry that we love, is trying to help people find their path in it. So while you're out there checking all that out, make sure to check us out on the HC Universal Network. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Remember, take care of yourselves, take care of your hearing, and until next time, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.